It looks like we are just about ready for OK Go. We're just waiting.
Hi, Hugh McIntyre on the air.
Hello, Damien.
So we're very excited to hear from you, and we are just about ready to get started. Our first question, we're wondering if you guys have anything else in the works right now, anything new?
Yeah, we have tons of stuff in the works. We are, I mean, we're starting a seven-week tour today. That's 7 weeks in the U.S., and then it goes a lot longer overseas. And we are playing bazillion festivals. Let's see, we're doing Sasquatch and Bamboozle, and we have made another video that will come out sometime in the next few months, and we are recording a bunch of songs, and we're doing some art projects with designers in Basel, Switzerland, and in Denmark, and we started a record company.
Oh, yeah, tell us more about that. Like, are we going to expect anything from the label other than OK Go releases, or is it just to put out your own things, or what?
Right now, it's just to put out our own stuff. If it winds up being something, you know, if it winds up being fun for us to do the business side of things, and we could be helpful to other people, then maybe we will. But it's just a way of taking up our own chance to worry about the people.
Right. So I just wanted to ask you, like, I've been a huge OK Go fan since the beginning. Like, I went out and bought both albums, like, the minute they came out, and, like, I've seen you guys live. I've been playing songs all morning, you know, from your past two albums and stuff. And so I was just wondering, like, you know, I was so ready for this new album, and when it came out, I was just kind of surprised that it was just, like, a different sound.
I mean, in short, it's sort of like, are you anything like you were 8 years?
No, I don't think so.
That's the most direct and most honest answer. But I'll tell you what happened when we started writing this record. We were doing much the same thing I think we had done for the last couple records. Our writing style was more, it was more like you might write prose. Like you think of the thought, and then you sort of like, you try to gather up the words that are involved with it, parse them, it's a grammatical statement, and then out comes like what you're thinking, right, as a sentence. And you know, the first, like, if you take the song Get Over It, for instance, I remember thinking to myself, why does the world have any good stadium rock anthems anymore? Write a stadium rock anthem. So
right.
We wrote a stadium rock anthem. And so, you know, it's pretty, like, a pretty clear linear progression. You know, you think of something, then you say it. And when we started writing this record that way, it just came out really, all the music we were writing just sounded really fake. You know, it sounded like us covering ourselves, or it sounded like, you know, us trying to sound like the thing that we think we sound like instead of just saying what we felt, you know? And so we sort of had to go back to the drawing board and figure out a new way to write, which wound up being much more of trial and error. You know, we just started playing around with sound until we would find things that were particularly emotionally resonant, and then we would chase down those moments. And where those moments are never really where you expect, and in the end, we came out with a sound that was a lot different than anything we've made before.
So while we're on the topic of that new album, where did you guys come up with the name for that album? It's very different than your first two.
It is. It's named after a book from 1876 by a sort of mad genius from Philadelphia who believed he had proven that blue light is the source of, like, is the essential life force. And he actually was so convinced and so convincing that he managed to get a patent on the color blue, which I just think is like one of the most absurd and beautifully poetic things ever. And he, as it turns out, he was of course wrong, but that's sort of what we love about it even more. He so desperately wanted to find an answer that he was willing to convince himself and the whole world that the answer was actually a color.
I never would have guessed that in a million years would I ever have picked
never,
that.
Never, no.
That's fantastic. Now, we were also wondering as well, where do you guys come up with the ideas for your music videos? You know, they're very, very well known, and everybody that sees them is just
blown away.
It's so different. Where do you get these ideas?
It's hard to say where ideas come from, but basically, think of it. You know, think of what you would do to make a music video, you know? Just forgetting what you think a music video should be. I mean, as long as you stop looking at music videos as advertisement for the music and see them as their own sort of art form, then what would you do? Like, think of the number of times you've been sitting around with your friends and be like, you know what to do? We'd do this totally crazy fucking thing, you know? really crazy and restrictive. It's just that that was a commercial enterprise that was trying to keep 14 to 18 year old eyeballs glued to the television so that they could sell skateboard sneakers. There's like, they're only going to play 50 or 100 videos a year, and there's a big kind of arms race for whatever could be the most populist and the most glitzy and glammy and what would sort of fit the mold the best. So people were sort of in this big race to make things that were more and more like each other. And everybody was trying to make things that were like, were exactly what you'd expect a video to be. And if you start thinking about it the other way around, if you just try to make things that you think are cool, it's usually things that people don't expect, not that people do expect.
Yeah. So tell me, you mentioned a couple minutes ago that, you know, oh, you guys are going on tour, you've got all these things going on, but you also mentioned you're going into the studio. So can you tell me kind of, can we expect more things like this album? Are we going back to the last? Are you guys mixing it up, doing something new? I mean, do you have any idea what might come out of those sessions?
Honestly, I don't know what will come out of the sessions, other than the fact that we wrote 106 songs for this last album, and, you know, obviously only 12 of them made it on there, so I'm sure some of that stuff will reemerge. But that's not saying much, because the way we write, we don't sort of have a stylistic format that we're working with. So a lot of the songs are like, the reason they didn't wind up on this album is because they sound nothing like this album, and they would have been really ill at ease among these songs, so... Mm-hmm. I can say, I mean, there's not much that I would say sounds a lot like our older records, but there's tons that doesn't sound like this record, so I guess we'll see.
Right.
Oh. So now, while we were watching some of your videos, we noticed that you were involved with State Farm. Can you tell us about that?
This Two Shall Pass video, the Rube Goldberg machine that we posted about a month ago, I guess, was funded by State Farm. They paid for the video.
Oh.
Now, how did you get them to do that?
Well, it's actually set up through our record label, which we are eternally thankful. But basically, you know, record labels don't have a lot of money anymore. And if we want to make a video that costs more than $5,000 or $10,000, we were going to have to find it somewhere. So, and we lived up to our promises to them. We're going to put a thank you to them, put their logo in it somewhere, and done, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, you were just talking about how you were on a major label and how apparently, you know, they don't have any money and stuff. So what happened with the split from EMI? I was reading about that the other day, and was that, are you guys still on good terms? Were you not happy with that? I mean, were they happy to let you go? I mean, you know, what went on there?
It actually has been a fairly amicable split, as these things go. I mean, it's not like, you know, record labels aren't like friends. They're big companies, you know. It's not like, yeah, you know, we still hang out on Friday night. Like, they were our business partners, and it just wasn't the right situation for us. We don't particularly care about old-fashioned music industry positions, rules. I mean, you know, record labels are set up to sell music, and that's it. They sell physical copies of records, and now they sell downloads of records. That's all they're really set up to do, and that side of the business, of course, has completely imploded recently. And so they need bands who really want to do things the sort of traditional way. Like, they need bands who are big-time radio hits, MTV. I mean, you know, they need very, like, traditional machinery. And the way we operate is much more sort of like, you know, new school than that. I mean, we want to give them directly to our fans, and we want to have a very close relationship with the fans, and we're very connected to like, the people who listen to music and the people who watch our videos and that kind of stuff online, and we make a lot of things that aren't strictly, you know, that you couldn't really sell on a CD. You know, we make a lot of videos, we make a lot of art, we do a lot of writing, we do a lot of things that weren't making any money for the label, but are doing wonders for our creative career. If you think, you know, like, our lives as people who get based down our creative ideas are going great, but that wasn't making a ton of money for the label.
Okay, so I have to say that I did love that announcement when you guys were announcing your split from EMI. The dogs in the suits were adorable.
Yeah, our board of directors.
You have a great crew there.
Actually, I'm going to say hi to the board right now. How are you, ladies?
Aww. What are their names?
Bunny and Dora. Bunny is a little brown one, and Dora is a big black one.
They're adorable.
So tell me, like, in your personal life, like, what are you listening to now? I know I'm always just kind of out looking for, you know, the next band that I don't think people know or whatever, you know, that's what I play on the show. So, I mean, do you have any suggestions, like, what's in your player right now?
I've actually actually been listening to a lot of older music. I'm kind of going through a rediscovery of 70s disco and soul right now. I mean, obviously, that none of that is undiscovered, but a lot of it's new to me, or a lot of it's just like remembering things that, yeah, sort of like different ways of thinking and listening to music. Nothing particularly obscure. I really love that Discovery record, you know, the side project of the guys from Ra Ra Riot and Vampire Weekend. They have that band Discovery. I really love that. I mean, it's a year old now, I think, but it was at least 9 months old or something. But I think it's just a really beautiful record. There's always great music coming from Craig Wedren, who used to be the singer for Shudder to Think, and he's done a lot of really interesting things recently. I'm trying to think of what else. I think that Taken by Trees record is pretty awesome. It's very just pretty and comfortable.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. Thank you for sharing. Now, we were just wondering also as well, since you guys are on tour right now, and obviously you've done a lot of touring in these days, but we were wondering, what's your favorite tour story?
I'm not really good with favorite. It's mostly just sort of like this constant, those video games where you would, like the first-person driving video games at a shopping mall playing like these really lo-fi driving games where you would sit there and sort of cruise through different fake cities.
Yeah.
That's kind of what tour feels like. It's just like, you can sort of like watch things fly by. and I'm not good at sort of categorizing it as best and worst, but I will tell you some funny things. Let me think of them. Many years ago, it was probably 7 or 8 years ago, we played by Southwest, and our tour manager and guitar tech, we had a two-person crew. That was the entire crew. The two of them got arrested wrestling naked in the median strip of I-35 at 7:30 in the morning. Rush hour traffic. And they were naked in the median strip. So that was exciting. When I got arrested one time in Florida for signing autographs.
What?
We were outside of a show, and I was signing stuff kids want signed, and somebody came over to me and was like, you know, you should really move from here. Whatever, you know, like, they didn't explain themselves. I figured it was something who worked at the club and was annoyed that the people weren't leaving fast enough. So I just sort of, you know, I gave them my nice kind of like smiley, like, yeah, I mean, I'm happy to just, you know, talk to our tour manager, and you know, if wherever I'm supposed to go, let me know, I'll go. But I just sort of basically ignored this woman. And like 5 minutes later, it turns out she was actually a police officer, and not what, like, the yellow golf shirt she was wearing was her uniform.
Oh.
And so two normally uniformed police officers came up and essentially tackled me. I think what really set them off was when they said, "What part of move? Didn't you understand?"
Whoa.
And I told them that I understood all of it. I just didn't do it. And then they were unhappy with that. So I spent 12 hours in jail in Orlando one night. That was fun. And that night, actually, the rest of the band were invited to a party at Joey from NSYNC's house. Apparently, Joey has the world's largest collection of bobbleheads.
Really?
I guess that's what happens when you make a lot of money and you're really young.
And then you don't do anything for, like, 5 years.
I'm not sure you can even do much more. But,
right.
But I don't know anything about NSYNC other than I think Justin Timberlake's pretty rad. But apparently he had a grotto with stripper pole and all sorts of
bedding
stuff. But I was in jail, so I didn't get to see it.
Can you tell us, I was thinking, while you're saying they were, like, wrestling naked, is there any particular reason why they were wrestling naked on the side of the highway?
In Austin, Texas, the median strip's actually down the middle of the highway, so it wasn't on the side. It was straight in the middle. Excuse me. It was bleeding straight. And my guess is that they were, I should say, it's not a guess. I'm fully aware that they were way less sober. What caused them to be wrestling? I'm guessing that was a pretty direct result of their intoxication. What caused them to be naked? Your guess is as good as mine. I don't know. I mean, while it makes for a pretty funny story, I can tell you it does not make for a very good road crew. You know, first of all, you would like them to be at least as responsible as the band. Second of all, you want them to, like, you know, not be arrested when you need to get to the next city the next day. You know?
Right. Well.
But as you might guess, neither of those people
people are still in our Rose crew, but they do make for some pretty funny stories. Rose guys in general, I don't know if we just had particularly fantastic luck in picking crazies, but I mean, if you think about what a person who works in a touring crew of a rock band, what their priorities in life are, you know, for a week or a month or maybe a few months, it's fun to go on tour because you're like in a different city every day and there's a rock show every night and it's kind of fun. But the truth is, like, as a job, once you've done that for a couple months, it's like the thrill of crappy hotels and, you know, backstage at clubs, it wears off pretty quick. And people keep doing it because it's something about being in a different city every day, something about not working with the same group of people. I mean, you know, you work with the same band every day, but other than that, you know, different people on the bus, different people in the airport, different people on the, you know, like radio station, every place you go. There's something about this that appeals to these people. So essentially what I'm saying is they're talking about sociopaths, people who don't actually want to have anything in their life that is stable. And so, you know, you're kind of looking at crazies like a pirate. I mean, they're awesome. Right now we have a particularly great, great road crew. Like, we have a crew of 5 people, and it's amazing. We could not do our show without them, and they're like family to us. You know, we live in a bus with them. There are 11 people who live in this tiny bus. You know, a tour bus looks like a big, sexy vehicle, but think about it as an apartment for 12 people. It's really small.
Yeah.
So we get to know these people very well, and we love them very dearly. But it is a very specific brand of person. And in the beginning, when we couldn't really afford anybody, when all we could do is like take somebody, you know, enough to buy a McDonald's meal every day, there were some really basic people. We had a guy who wore chainmail. We had a dude who shaved his eyebrows because he said it meant other people couldn't tell what.
Huh.
I mean, there was a guy who spent hours and hours and hours like mumbling on his phone, and we thought he was talking to like his girlfriend or something. But someone checked his call log and figured out he hadn't been talking to anyone. He just didn't feel like having interactions with anybody in the band.
Wow. Whoa. Wow.
Interesting dudes out there.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Well, we are going to just let you guys go because we know that you're very, very busy, and we appreciate you guys being able to give us some of your time today. Thank you, Damien.
Of course. Nice talking to you guys.
So now, just to let everybody out there know, OK Go is going to be in Boston at the House of Blues on May 7th, and every single one of you should go and check them out for sure, because they are amazing.
Woo! Woo! All right, thanks, Damien.
Thank you.
Bye.
So again, thanks to OK Go, thanks, Damien. We love you dearly here. New record is out now. Go and get it. Coming to Boston May 7th. Go see him. I think I'll be there. I'm telling you guys, it's worth it. It's worth the price of the ticket to see him. So, peace out.